This is The Headline with Brandon Waltons, bringing you the biggest stories from across Texas. The Headline gives you the news you need to be an informed citizen.
Hello, everybody. Happy Friday, and thank you for joining us on The Headline. I'm Brandon Waltons. Today, we're going to take a look at some of the big stories going on. We've got the special session, the third special session, I should say. Having already began, we're going to take a look at what they've done. Also, we've got some folks leaving the legislature in light of redistricting and redrawing those maps. We're going to talk about that. But first, I've got Jeremy Kitchen, our Capitol correspondent here, to talk about some news where Texas has been in the national news. Sure. And specifically, you've seen Governor Greg Abbott this week, where Fox News host Tucker Carlson, I know you're often called the Tucker of Texas, right? Sure. We got the Tucker of Texas here, but we're talking about Tucker Carlson. who actually blasted Governor Greg Abbott in kind of a little bit of an unprecedented move, largely, where, you know, normally Fox News, those outlets are usually pretty friendly to Governor Greg Sure. Abbott and to red state governors. But you had this week Tucker Carlson going after Abbott for not protecting the southern border, not doing enough there, and for refusing to go on the show. Check out this clip from this week.
We open this show with horrifying pictures of what's happened at our southern border, which is completely open, and this country is being invaded. No, that's not an overstatement. More than 1 million people this year expected by the rest of the world. This has been going on for months, and we've asked Texas Governor Greg Abbott many times to come on this show to explain why he hasn't called the National Guard to seal the Texas border and protect the rest of us from this invasion. Greg Abbott has refused to come on repeatedly. So pretty soon, possibly tomorrow, we plan to invite his primary opponents on the show to describe what they would do if they ran Texas. That might be an interesting conversation. We'd like to give Governor Abbott one more chance to come on sincerely. Please, come on and tell us how you plan to save the rest of us from what is happening in your state.
You know, and it's really interesting to see that. That's not even the first time that Tucker Carlson has gone after Abbott. Back in May, he said he called him a fraud, right. Also on border issues. Now we've seen that, I think, already you've got Alan West, one of the candidates who has appeared on there. This doesn't really look very good, I think, for the governor right now.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's an interesting contrast from the narrative, I think, that the governor himself is trying to kind of continue to promote, right, especially like on other shows there on mm-hmm. Fox News. You continue to see, you know, like this, the governor sending DPS, everything else. I mean, heck, during the regular session and then in the most recent special session, they've spent, you know, a lot of money. They've allocated a lot of money to this effort. Tucker Carlson, I think, if I remember right, specifically called him out for saying, you need to deploy the National Guard to stop this invasion. And, of course, that's been something he's thus far been reluctant to do. And, of course, this has been in the news mm-hmm. for a long time, but certainly this week, as you see, I think it's, you know, thousands of Haitian migrants mm-hmm. specifically that have come up there and camping under the International Bridge and what have you. And so it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, and save for some moves, which, you know, he's certainly pushed up, where you've got maybe some clips of DPS police officers right. lining their SUVs in an attempt to sort of create their own barricade there. You know, largely, the governor's response has been to look to the federal government. I mean, sure. you even saw where he wrote a letter to Joe Biden asking him to declare a federal emergency on the border. So far, we've not seen a response from the president on that.
Yeah, correct. That's right. I mean, I think really brass tacks, what it comes down to is you've got Governor Abbott trying to kind of put a foot in both camps, if you will, right? Where he continues to communicate that, you know, we need the federal government to stick in, but he also wants to somehow kind of communicate that I'm a governor that's doing things. Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, you've got thousands of people coming across the border, and you've got a lot of Texans, and now, of course, you know, national news wondering, what are we doing to stop it?
Well, it's certainly something he's going to have to contend with. You know, when you've got, I think Tucker Carlson is the biggest name sure. in cable news right now. When you have him calling you out, you probably need to watch out. And I know that, like I mentioned, Alan West was on the show. It'll be interesting to see if some of the other candidates like Chad Prather and Don Huffines get invited as well.
Sure.
So that's the action that's happening on the border. But there's also some action happening, and to some extent, here in the Texas Capitol, as we're now in the first week of the third called special session. And the big topic on lawmakers' minds is, of course, redistricting.
That's right. It's something we've kind of known for a while, right? It was going to be delayed until then. And just by way of background, very briefly, right, redistricting process takes place every 10 years.
Yep.
It would have taken taken part of the regular session that occurred between January and May. The data was originally expected to come in April, and that would have prompted map drawing and all that kind of stuff. Of course, due to COVID-19 and census delays, that data was delayed. It actually came out mid-August, I guess, finally. And then they use that data to produce maps based on a few rules and what have you, proposed maps for the next 10 years. So there's a lot of implications.
Yeah, this whole sort of domino effect. If you want to get into more of the specifics of the process, we've got the article, if you're watching on Facebook right now, down in the comments that explains a little more in depth about the process. But big picture, lawmakers get to draw their districts, right. not just for Congress, where we're adding two additional seats.
That's right. So it goes from 36 to 38 congressional seats here in Texas. They've got to write 150 House district seats. They've got to write 31 Senate district seats, and then 15 of the State Board of Education seats.
So we haven't seen the House maps yet, or the congressional maps for that matter. What we have seen, however, a State Board of Education, I think most interestingly, that has created a lot of buzz this week, is those proposed Senate maps.
Correct.
And I know they're still working on it. I think there literally is a committee hearing right now where they're making some tweaks and some changes potentially to those maps. But you took an in-depth look this week at some of those changes. What's the overall big picture?
Sure. So I think the best way to say what the overall picture is that it's supposed to be an apolitical process that is one of the most political processes, right? And I say that just because the way you kind of look at the maps is it's very obvious, right, at least for Senate maps, that whomever is doing the map drawing is certainly trying to do it in a way that benefits, right? Kind of bolstering Republican seats. Most people gauge, they're currently at 18 Republicans and 13 Democrats. Most people gauge based on previous election trends that, if these maps hold, right, that it would be, they might come back with 19 Republicans and only have 12 Democrats, right? But specifically, I mean, you've got districts that have always kind of been controversial. You've got, I think the most notable one is Senate District 10, which is currently all comprised of like Southern Tarrant County.
Right. This is the district that was held at one point by a Republican, then it was held by a Democrat, Wendy Davis. Right. We, of course, remember her, pink tennis shoes, right?
Failed congressional candidate.
Yes. Yeah. That Wendy Davis, she held the state Senate seat there. She was replaced by Connie Burton, a Republican. And then you had sort of in that Beto wave of 2018, her get replaced by now State Senator Beverly Powell, who's a Democrat. And it looks like, if nothing else in these maps, they're making moves to try to get her out.
It certainly looks like that. I mean, I don't think you'll catch the author or anyone explicitly say that, of course. But like to give you an example, right? Currently, Senate District 10, wholly within the southern portion of Tarrant County. The original proposed boundary added both Johnson and Parker counties. Now a committee substitute, which by the way was dropped at like 8:30 last night, adds like an additional 6 or 7 counties to that list that are all primarily historically Republican, right? Or that have voted Republican on the national level in most down ballot races. And so it's hard to argue against people that have critiqued that and that like you're certainly throwing a lot of Republican voters into the mix. And if you're Beverly Powell, you're probably concerned.
I think another interesting change, and of course, like I said, you go into detail about all of these, a lot of these in an article, more than we can do here on the show.
Sure.
But I think one of the interesting changes was to I don't know how you describe the district. It's not really even a Central Texas Senate district.
I had a hard time categorizing.
I don't know how you'd call it. It kind of goes into South Texas now. But it's the Senate District 24. That's the seat currently held by State Senator Don Buckingham, who's running for land commissioner. So she'll be leaving the Senate. But this was a district that essentially was a Central Texas district, sort of outside of Austin, goes up to Temple and a little bit west and southwest.
Yeah, towards Abilene.
Sure.
Yeah.
Now with this new proposal, the district really changes form and it stretches all the way down what county is it?
It's like Atascosa.
Atascosa County, which is the residence of a certain former state senator who is now seeking the seat.
That's correct. So Don Buckingham, as you alluded to, is the current state senator for that district. That's important because what seems to have happened is like, it's kind of, I think if you look at the district as a whole, they shifted it south. and notably shifted the southern portion of that district, to your point, to like it's Medina, Atascosa counties, which of course is the home of former State Senator Pete Flores, who was the state senator from Senate District 19. That district, or that portion, his residence, would now be in Senate District 24. And wouldn't you know it, based on that, he announced he's running and very quickly announced the endorsements of people like Dan Patrick, Governor Abbott, Buckingham, Donna Campbell, I saw this morning, right? I mean, the deck certainly seems stacked in his favor.
Yeah, which was interesting because you did have at least one candidate who had already announced for that, right, in former Austin City Councilwoman Ellen Troxclair. Now she's no longer in that district. Remains to be seen if she keeps her campaign going.
Sure. She announced back in June. To be clear here, right, these are just proposed maps,
sure,
right? And so anything can change. And in fact, I think in a statement where she was still campaigning, she kind of alluded to that, right? Where it's like, I'm just going to continue campaigning, you know, and who knows what the final maps are. But it is notable that, you know, she announced very early on back in June, without knowing what the maps were going to be, and then the currently proposed maps does not include her residency.
Those are the dangers. So,
sure.
Meanwhile, you know, in the House, right, we've not seen any of those maps yet, although there's been some chatter.
Right, that's correct. So, I mean, I hear reports every day, different reports seemingly from legislative staff, what have you. The official bill has not been filed as of yet. In fact, I still hear there's still negotiations behind the scene, right, scenes. But to be clear, right, like what I always like to tell people about the redistricting process is certainly we're hearing a lot about it now, but the reality is that these lawmakers have been negotiating for the better part of 2 years, right?
Sure.
I mean, you know, there's been threats behind the scenes of like, oh, you're going to vote with me on this, or we might consider, you know, something happening during the redistricting process. And so it is a hugely largely political process that takes place really over 2 years beforehand, and it's all kind of culminating now.
Yeah, right? we'll see how that progresses as the legislature continues on.
Sure.
They're going to have some other things to cover. You've got Governor Greg Abbott actually adding some additional items to that agenda. If folks remember that agenda, as it came out originally for this third session, was actually rather small and included five items. It was, I might have a Rick Perry moment here forgetting the fifth one. But you've got redistricting, allocating federal funding, federal COVID funding, protecting girls' sports,
right.
protecting girls' sports, vaccine mandates, not really a prohibition necessarily, but sort of addressing vaccine mandates,
right,
and then dog tethering. But now that you've got these new priorities, one of which I think people have been waiting a while for, which is property tax relief.
Right, that's right, which is hilarious in its own right, because if you were paying attention to the last special session, they all promoted what great property tax relief they sent out, which of course, as we've talked about multiple times, we've written several articles on, was only property tax relief for special classes. But here we are back, and this was not something, to your point, that was originally on the agenda as of a week ago, but to Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick's credit, he named it as one of his legislative priorities last week, and then Speaker Dade Phelan communicated via a tweet that he also supported such an effort. To be clear, and to not get too nuanced here, the differences and the difference between the bill that's now already passed the Senate, by the way, in SB 1 or Senate Bill 1, is what it does is a one-time right payment. It buys down, it basically takes money to buy down the school maintenance and operation portion of the property tax rate. I know that's very complicated, but that's the reality. It's the largest portion of the property tax. And so it does that one time only, right? The argument they'll make is that this will continue over time. But it is, I think they up their valuation. So for the median household in Texas, which is $300,000, that would provide about $200 worth. I think it's like $188 total, about $200 worth of relief for your property.
So sort of a temporary solution. Meanwhile, you know, they could be doing things where they actually build it in where you get permanent tax relief and actually work towards
eliminating
a property
tax. And there are currently bills filed to that effect.
Right.
Correct. Yeah.
Another priority added to the session. Bail reform. This is something that lawmakers did some work on statutorily during the session, but a constitutional amendment failed to cross the finish line in the Texas House. Remains to be seen if the votes will be there this session for that.
Right.
And another, but more importantly, so those are the things that were added. Importantly, though, I think it's still those things that are missing. We still have not seen anything on gender modification in children. We've not seen anything about mask mandates in school. We haven't really seen anything specifically saying that, you know, COVID mandates, you know, especially from the federal government or employers or anything like that, should be banned. Right. The actual item we have on the call says something to the effect of legislation determining whether state and local authorities can impose COVID vaccine mandates, and if so, what exceptions should apply.
That's right.
A very broad call there, but nothing specifically going after COVID mandates. And, you know, it's been a very, very hot topic, especially in the wake of President Joe Biden's attempt to mandate them essentially federally, is what we've seen. And we've actually got a video here from 1836 Studios with Jackie Schlegel from Texans for Vaccine Choice talking a little bit about the issue and why it's important for folks to get involved. Check this out.
I am Jackie Schlegel, the executive director of Texans for Vaccine Choice, and it is a really good time to stand with us as we work to protect in advance informed consent, medical privacy, and vaccine choice.
Many of us are frustrated with the nearly 80 million Americans who are still not vaccinated. As your president, I'm announcing tonight a new plan to require more Americans to be vaccinated to combat those blocking public health.
President Biden has repeatedly said throughout the years that there would not be a vaccine mandate. And the truth is, they have created such a hostile environment and are implementing policies that we consider social mandates.
The actions I proposed on vaccines last week are so critical. From requiring federal workers to get vaccinated, requiring healthcare workers to be vaccinated, requiring employers with over 100 employees to institute vaccine and or test protocols.
You don't have the right to work if you don't get this vaccine. You don't have the right to access your community or your livelihood unless you get this vaccine. That is indeed a mandate. And make no mistake, the next step in this administration is to force each and every one of you, to force your children to pit neighbor against neighbor if you do not comply with getting this vaccine.
This is not about freedom or personal choice.
We're not anti-vaccine. We're not here to stop anyone from having access to any vaccine. But our goal really is to make sure that parental rights are protected, that individual rights are protected, that employee rights are protected. But now we have to act in the state of Texas. We have to get our legislators to get a bill to the governor's desk to solve this problem of employee mandates. Because make no mistake, if we do not win this battle, if the state of Texas does not lead the way, the rest of the nation will go the other way as well.
We've been patient, but our patience is wearing thin, and your refusal has cost all of us.
President Biden's vaccine mandates are here. Friends, they are already here. They're already rolling out all across the state of Texas. I would highly recommend you follow Texas Scorecard and the content that they are putting out, because at the end of the day, becoming informed and educated on this issue is half the battle to make sure that we can keep these mandates out of the state of Texas.
Well, there's been 9 bills filed so far on COVID mandates, and it is sort of part of the call to an extent, but you know, not really some of those specific efforts that some people want to see. And so we'll be following a lot of those issues. Another thing that is not on the call, but actually some high-profile people are now calling for it to be, is an audit of the 2020 election. You had yesterday former President Donald Trump writing an open letter to Governor Greg Abbott asking him to put a forensic audit, specifically a bill filed by State Representative Steve Toth that he's been filing during these special sessions, to go back and look at the 2020 elections. And right now we've seen that the governor himself has been silent on the issue.
Yeah, to my knowledge, at least before we came in here, I have not seen a reply. I believe he specifically alluded to a bill by State Representative Steve Toth. It's House Bill 16, I believe, during the ongoing special session. This was a bill that, kind of like the property tax relief bill, in the last week of the last special session, State Senator Paul Bettencourt had this bill considered in committee and then on the Senate floor. But it just wasn't ultimately considered by both chambers. And I think we have an article to that effect.
Yes.
That being said, It's it's interesting that the president's following closely and mentioned it because obviously he wants it on this one. We have not seen Governor Abbott, to my knowledge, reply yet. You did see the Secretary of State.
The Secretary of State's office, right?
Office.
Right now, the Secretary of State position has been vacant now for
months.
Correct. But the office said that they're going to perform what they're calling an audit on four different counties. Remains to be seen some of the specifics of what exactly that will look like.
Sure.
Notably, President Trump endorsed Governor Greg Abbott. So this seems to be the first, one of the first public signs we've had where you've seen some pretty public distance between the two of them on an issue.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. But it's interesting that the president's paying attention to the ongoing special sessions, right?
Yeah.
If you will, here in Texas.
Exactly.
Sure.
Exactly. Well, we've been paying attention. And if you've been watching the Senate, this may come as a surprise if you've seen some of the previous special sessions, and I say that jokingly, that is that the Senate has gotten to work pretty much right away on these priorities, and they made fast work and passed four of the seven bills already, essentially.
That's right. We're less than a week in, right? The third special session started on Monday. They passed four out of the seven. That includes, for the fourth time, the Youth Sports Protection Bill, if you will, that officially passed. They passed their property tax bill. They passed the dog tethering bill, right? But they passed four out of the seven. They are currently, as we speak, right, taking up the redistricting portion of the special session agenda call, specifically talking about the Senate maps and the State Board of Education maps. And they have yet to take up the federal relief appropriations for the money back in February or March that the federal government allocated, and they've yet to take up the vaccine mandates.
Right, you've seen those bills sort of continue to get filed.
Right.
And, this weekend, today and tomorrow, the Senate redistricting committee is going to be holding hearings. And so you see that progress in the Senate. Meanwhile, in the House, they also started on Monday, just like the Senate. They literally have not done anything.
That's right. They gaveled in very quickly on Monday, didn't do much of anything. They notably did not refer any bills to committees, which means nothing's getting done. They came back in on Thursday, considered a few resolutions, memorial resolutions, congratulatory resolutions, and then gaveled out until Monday. Notably also did not refer bills. And they, as of last check coming in here, they have not even filed their priority House bills 1 through 9. Only one of them has been.
That is amazing. I mean, you know, these special sessions, right, they can last up to 30 days at a time. The critical part of me, or maybe I don't know if you call it pessimistic, maybe realistic, kind of looking at past performance, says, okay, you can't have the big rush at the end where we run out of time, right?
Sure.
Unless you burn up some time on the front end.
Sure.
I mean, could this potentially be what's happening?
Sure. I think a concerned citizen would be like, you don't want your legislator meeting all the time anyway. We're in our third special session, and you've got one of the chambers who they'll gavel back in Monday. That'll be a week into the up to 30-day legislative session, and they haven't done anything, right?
Wow.
I mean, you should be concerned.
Yeah. So last thing I want to talk about is who's not going to be returning to the Texas legislature. We've seen this week and over the past few weeks a number of announcements for members, some of them coming as somewhat of a surprise, the people who are saying they're bowing out, they're retiring, they're not going to be coming back.
Sure.
All this has to be considered in light of redistricting as well that's going on, where some members' districts may not really be there, right, when they run for re-election, if they were to run for re-election the next time. Running through some of these on this list here, I think a big surprise this week was State Representative Chris Patty saying that he was going to hang it up just a week after being censured by his hometown county Republican Party.
That's right. I think it was last week, the Harrison County GOP Executive Committee, right, passed a censorship.
censure resolution.
They passed it to the state party, if you will, but that's one of his, I think, six counties, if you will, his home county,
Marshall,
as you alluded to. Chris Patty, of course, is the chairman of the House State Affairs Committee, a very powerful committee in the House. It's also a committee in the past that a lot of conservatives have seen their conservative priorities die in, right? But he announced this week that he
things like a ban on taxpayer-funded lobbying.
He was the hatchet man on that
issue this session. And so certainly a win for conservatives there. Ben Lamont, who is, I think, just a sophomore this session, had already previously announced that he was not going to be returning. Of course, you've got James White, who's been in the House. Now he's running for agricultural commissioner.
Yeah, he's challenging Sid Miller,
which is going to open up his seat. This week, you had Celia Israel, an Austin area representative, Democrat, you know, of course, but saying that she's not going to run, but that actually she is considering a run for Austin mayor.
That's right. Now, the mayoral election, like filing, doesn't even take place until July of next year. But she indicated she's forming an exploratory committee for such an effort. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. You have Michelle Beckley. If people don't remember her, she's the blue-haired Democrat from up in the DFW area. Who, when she went to D.C., when the Democrats left and went to D.C. about a week or two in, she, I guess, liked it so much. She said, "I want to run for Congress,"
So
she's going to be running for Congress against Beth Van Dyne. Which means that she's not going to be returning to the legislature. Mm-hmm. Of course, that was a seat that was held by a Republican. Mm-hmm. It's conceivable that you could redistrict that to be more friendly to Republicans going in the future. So perhaps she knew that her time was about to be up in the Texas House.
Sure.
Another, I think, surprising announcement came from Scott Sanford as well. Mm-hmm. Who said he's not going to be running for re-election.
That's right. This is someone who kind of came in, you know, in the, I guess, or what... early in 2010 cycle, that time frame. Has not had a primary challenger since then, notably got one this go around, but did announce that that he'd be not seeking re-election, which is interesting.
One of Sanford's allies in the House, Matt Krause, a state representative who's been there since, I think, around the same time, has announced that he's running for Texas Attorney General, which
That's
means
right.
that he's not going to be serving in the House next session. John Turner, a Democrat from DFW, is also calling it quits. And the last one here, really notably, is Jim Murphy, who's not just a state representative from Houston area, but he's actually right now the chairman of the House Republican Caucus, ostensibly the leader of House Republicans. Right. And yet, as you've looked in recent weeks, and we've got that analysis, your analysis up on our website, this is a guy who's leading the Republican Caucus from the left. I mean, he's often against conservative priorities and against his own colleagues.
He is much closer to the Democrat caucus chairman, if you will, on most ring schemes than he is of his own caucus or the median of his caucus. Absolutely. There's been multiple Republican Party of Texas priorities that he's voted against, both legislative priorities and just platform issues, things that are within their party's platform that he's voted against. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's certainly interesting.
Yeah, that announcement came yesterday. It was a little bit of a surprise, I suppose. But, you know, we wish him luck in his retirement, right? I expect that we're going to see a lot more of these come out, or at least just several more of these come out, in light of not only redistricting, but I think you also had, we've talked about this, you had 2 years ago where a lot of members were told not to retire, to hold off their retirements because they were concerned about... keeping the House in 2020 ahead of redistricting. And so I think there's a little bit of pent-up demand there. So
I think that's right, yeah.
We'll see that. I want to let people know some housekeeping stuff here. If you've been following it, we've got a new podcast coming up later today at 2 p.m. We've got our TexLedge autopsy files. This week we're talking about taxpayer-funded lobbying, an issue, right? Chris Patty does play a role in this. Check out this clip.
I'm Luke Macias, conservative political consultant and commentator here in Texas. Have the Luke Macias Show here with Texas Scorecard. Have worked on conservative policy issues for the last decade, one of which that everyone cares about, of course, is taxpayer-funded lobbying.
Luke explained that taxpayer-funded lobbying is an issue he says shocks citizens when they're told what it is.
Taxpayer-funded lobbying is one of those issues that when you explain it to the average citizen, they're really dumbfounded that it's even a thing. At the end of the day, what we have is a system where your money in largely property taxes, some sales taxes, is taken by local school districts, by counties, by cities, but even by like your local mud district. We have these crazy stories of these little muds that have their sewer utility fees or whatever, and 20 or 30% of their budget is spent hiring a couple lobbyists, paying them several $100,000 a year to then tell the legislature what to do to most benefit that government against the citizens that it serves. And where we see this play out most commonly is on the property tax issue, where we have cities and counties and school boards who literally pay tens of millions of dollars every single session to all of the most connected lobbyists in Texas, who then go in and tell all of the lawmakers to not support actual permanent property tax relief, because in order to do so, you would have to take revenue away from those governments. So you have the government taxing the citizens, taking their money, paying people to then lobby the legislature against the citizens themselves.
We're going to have that conversation with Luke Macias and State Senator Bob Hall. Some clips there talking about taxpayer-funded lobbying, the fight to ban it. Again, that's going to be up at 2 p.m. You can catch it at our website at texasscorecard.com. We're also going to have it up on Facebook, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts. So be sure to check that out. We've got a new episode coming up next week. Also want to let people know that if you haven't signed up already, we've got early bird pricing still going on now for the Conservative Leader Awards. Okay, this is a can't-miss event. It's going to be taking place on December 4th in Irving, Texas. So get your tickets now. We've got those tickets up at texasscorecard.com/CLA2021, or I'm sure we'll drop a link down here if you're watching live. And lastly, want to let folks know that spots for our fellowship in 2022 are open for spring, summer, fall. This is for folks 18 to 25 interested in working in conservative politics, conservative journalism, want to take a semester and work with us here. It's a paid fellowship. You do not have to be enrolled in college. It's just for anybody age is 18 to 25. And so you can find that application at texasscorecard.com/fellowship. Well, I want to thank everybody for watching this week. I know it was a lot of content. I'm sure we'll have even more next week as the Texas House should probably start to get to work. We'll see. But I want to thank everybody for watching. I see, of course, Ruth from Cisco down there in the comments. Great to have you with us, Ruth. Again, thank you so much for following us. Have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to The Headline from Texas Scorecard. We're live every Friday at 11 a.m. on the Texas Scorecard Facebook page to talk about the biggest stories of the week, so check us out there or listen to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, whatever platform you prefer. And while you're there, you can also check out the ever-growing line of podcasts and programming provided by Texas Scorecard.